Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Hides us both from others and from ourselves. It teaches us not to trust our feelings. There are some Judeo-Christian religions that hold the viewpoint that shame and guilt are necessary to guide one's conscience. It's as if a conscience would be directionless without the whip of shame. So what if we consider that shame may not be as useful to us as a moral compass? Or what if unhooking ourselves from shame can lead to being able to hear the intelligent messages from our body, messages that allow healing to take place at a deeper, more sustainable level? These questions will be guiding our exploration today with our guest, David Bedrick. David Bedrick holds a doctorate degree in jurisprudence and is a diplomate of the Process Work Institute. He founded the Santa Fe Institute for Shame-Based Studies, and his work focuses on addressing shame at its root and helping people forge a new and a compassionate relationship with their authentic selves. Bedrick is a contributor to Psychology Today magazine and has shared his teachings with thousands of students globally through books, social media, articles, and online courses. He's the author of several books, including The Unshaming Way, a three-part model for dismantling shame. So please join us for the next hour as we explore the significance that shame plays in our lives and how to dismantle it with our guest, David Bedrick. I'm speaking with David at his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. David, welcome.
Justine, it's so good to see you again.
It's so great to be with you again. I always enjoy our conversations and learn so much from them, really, truly. And I know in my introduction, you know, I introduced that we'll be talking about shame and dismantling it, and you call it unshaming it. And I want to start us off with asking, how does the process of unshaming, dismantling shame, we'll say, differ from traditional therapy?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, traditional therapy and most healing ideas take our difficulties, my depression, my anxiety, or my headaches, or my nervousness in doing this interview, and treat that like a problem to relieve me of. Oh, you're nervous, David, to talk to Justine a little bit? Have some chamomile. Meditate a little bit. Relax. Settle down. And traditional psychology treats all of our difficulties like that fundamentally. I'm anxious. Here's what you could do to be less anxious. I'm depressed. Here's what you could do to be less depressed. So an unshaming approach says, oh, you're anxious? What's it like to be anxious? Take a moment and feel it. Well, I have an awkwardness in me. It's okay to be awkward. You're doing something new with Justine. You haven't talked to her. Oh, really? That's okay? Yeah. I feel so much better. Thank you.
So you're saying that there's a deeper listening that wants to take place rather than going to self-fixing to say there's kind of an immediate reaction like, okay, I'm feeling anxious. Okay, so I'm going to do my meditation. I'm going to do my breathing exercises. I'm going to go to this and that. And you're saying to pause and linger there a bit.
That's exactly right. Today I did a workshop for some people in Romania, and I was there a couple of months ago teaching. And I also noticed, maybe that's why I'm bringing it up, my nervousness beforehand. And I thought, I should get over my nervousness. That's the conventional therapeutic mindset. It's all of our mindset. I'm not sleeping much at night. How can I sleep more? I'm feeling one way. I'm angry. How can you chill out and relax? So that's great. So I was thinking, what if I let my nervousness speak? And I said to myself, these are people I don't know as well. I've been to Romania a little bit. I don't know the culture. I don't know enough about these people. So I said, oh. So I started off the seminar saying, and some people tell me I'm like a male person from the United States, and I don't know Romania very well. If you were to teach me a little bit about what, as an American, I might not know. And then people started sharing things with me, and I felt so good. And all of a sudden, I got comfortable. And then something else happened, Justine. We connected with each other. See, that was not just so that I can deal with my uncomfort. Something I didn't know was about to happen. We started feeling safe, and I'm going to call it intimate, meaning the connection grew between us, and the group became smaller emotionally, like we came closer together, all because I took this thing called nervousness and let it speak, as opposed to, hi, I'm together. I don't need anything. I'm a teacher. I'm exaggerating the voice, right? I'm tough. I'm esteemed. I'm secure. So it built something I wouldn't have guessed.
I'm just imagining if I'm in a group of people and I'm saying, I'm really nervous right now and feeling insecure, there might be a tendency for the group to fix me or give me permission. And they think that I'm asking permission for something, but that's not what you're talking about.
That's right. That's not what I'm talking about. You have to bring it out, connect with it first. What's it like to be insecure? That's like a diagnosis. I have insecurity issues. But what's it like? I feel vulnerable. I feel tender. I feel like I don't know people. So now if that's a little bit deeper. So now if I said, I don't know you all. I'm feeling vulnerable today. Are you feeling vulnerable? I guess vulnerable means I'm open to connecting with you. So I'm bringing out a little bit more of the depth, and that's going to start building, weaving connection. But you're exactly right. If I just said, I'm feeling scared today. Don't worry about it, David. So I have to go a little bit deeper. So I'm expressing myself from that place. It'll look and feel more human to people.
Mm-hmm. And when you go deeper, now we need to really start to delve into what is that deeper? Is that an intellectual process of, so how do we tap into that deeper place?
Yeah, that's such a good question. We need experience. Experience, not an idea, right? I'm angry today. Not an idea about anger. What's it like? What's the experience itself? And what the best way I know to make contact with experience is through the body, through soma. What's the anger like in my body? Is it in my chest? Is it in my belly? What's it like in my movement? Are my hands clenching? Is my jaw tight? What's it like in my voice? Is it or is it yes? Or I can't wait for this to happen. Or that's enough. So what's it really like inside? My voice, my body, my movement. And once I know that, I can then bring it out. But if I don't know that, I'll just say some words that sound like a description of me, but you won't make contact with me.
So I need an example. I need some sort of concrete example, because I know that you say the body speaks its medicine, but it's not with words. It's not an intellectual process. And you're saying, so you're tapping into the wisdom of the body and its knowingness and how it can be truly helpful. And if I go, okay, I am feeling anxious right now, and then I guess I close my eyes and I ask my body, okay, where is it feeling? It's feeling someplace in my body, maybe in the pit of my stomach.
And
it's turning over. And so what does that tell me then?
Then you'd have to go, let me give you an example and then we'll come back to you. So I once worked with a woman and she said to me, I need help because I've been working on my anger for over 10 years. And then listen to the language. She says, and I'm still angry. I'm still. And the word still almost always means shame. I should have gotten over this, that her voice says, right? I'm still this way. And I said, can you say some angry words so I know what you're talking about? Oh, I don't know if I can do that. How about if you raise your hand and show me with your hand, show me a clenched hand or a chop or a hardness in your hand in front of you. Show me. I want to see this thing called anger that you're wanting to get rid of. Let's get to know it first. With my hand, I don't know if I can do that. Okay, here's a big whiteboard and some magic markers with colors. Draw an angry picture. That's strange, he says. So now I'm thinking, Justine, she's wanting to get rid of something. I don't exactly know what it is. And I'm not sure she knows what it is she's getting rid of. So finally, we stood up. I said, if you were to push me, it was okay for her to make physical contact. If you were to push me in an angry way, I put up my arm so she can push against my arm. Can you show me a little anger? That was awkward, but she put her hand against my forearm and started pushing. And I tried to not move so she could feel it. I said, go ahead, feel this thing we're calling anger. Why am I saying calling? Because I don't know what it is. That's just a word. But the body, her hands against my forearm, pushing. And then she starts to make some noise. She's trying to move me out of the way. Now she's in touch in her body with this energy called anger. And I said, what do you need? And she does that a few times. She says, tell me something angry. And she said, I've been in a relationship for 20 years and I'm tired of pulling all the weight. I'm taking care of the kids. I'm making the money and going to work so much. That's too much for me. And my partner is not doing enough. And I said, that sounds really good. Have you spoken to your partner about that? No. Can you see why she's not over? I'm putting quotes around over her anger, because her anger is a word, but the feeling of energy that she needs to push through and say, wait a second, this is not going so well. I don't feel like this is fair. She needs a conversation. What does she need to have that conversation? To break through the thing that says, don't bring it up, don't be angry. She needs a little bit of something of this force.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that demonstration. It gives us a good background into what you're talking about. I'm here with David Bedrick. He is the author of The Unshaming Way, a three-part model of dismantling shame. And if you want to know more about his work, go to davidbedrick.com. And he spells his name B-E-D-R-I-C-K, davidbedrick.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm here with David Bedrick, and we're talking about dismantling shame. David, shame isn't the same as guilt, is it? What would be the difference between shame and guilt?
Well, most people would say, and I would agree, people who studied this would say guilt is something like, I did that wrong. I shouldn't have said to Justine that harsh comment that was inappropriate. I feel badly. And then I might repair that by saying, Justine, I'm really sorry. That was inappropriate. That wasn't about you. I had a bad day. Shame is not, I did something wrong. It's something is wrong with me. So now instead of saying, oh, I feel bad, Justine, let me apologize. When I'm in shame, I don't do that. I walk around thinking, why am I like this? I always do this. I've done that before. What's wrong with me that I do that? How come I can't control myself? Can you hear the self-recrimination that's happening?
Right.
I'm somehow defective. This is the thing I always do. You're not even in my mind anymore. It's all about me and my viewpoint about myself, how I've begun to analyze myself as somebody who has something wrong with them.
You know, David, when I delved into this book of yours and really starting to think about shame and all the different exercises you had and everything, I thought to myself, personally, I am not in touch with feeling shame.
That's right.
I don't feel it. And yet I know from reading and from studying it with you that it's unlikely that I don't have some sort of internalized shame.
Yeah.
And so my question is, what are some of the ways that we can get in touch with this insidious thing that runs us maybe unconsciously?
Yeah, that's the difficult thing. You're right. It's unconscious. Some people, like most of the writers about shame, would say, it's this painful, agonizing feeling. My pants fell down and you saw something and I'm like, wish I could cover up. That's true. But a lot of the shame is happening at an unconscious level. I'm not even aware of it. In fact, I might feel good. For instance, this is a painful detail, but there are many people in the world in different countries, people who have of color that would be bleaching their skin. This is bad skin. This is not good skin to have. That person bleaches their skin and doesn't say, I feel shame. They say, well, I feel better this way. It doesn't mean injury is not happening, right? To the top individual should do what they want, but it doesn't mean that there's not injury happening to many people, huge percentages of people in some places, more than 50% in some places. But I'm thinking, I feel better though this way. So, but here's an interesting detail. If I can follow a trail off of that, think about this. And this is something I've been thinking about since I've been working with people for 35 years. I once had a person who I knew from later on in our discussions had a violent upbringing, abuse. And that person was told, you're too emotional. You're too upset all the time. You're too angry. Now, I worked with another person who, as an adult, was violated. I'm trying to be careful because I don't want to trigger people. A woman who was raped, and she went to a religious figure. And that person says, you need to learn to forgive. And now another person who told me about a violent story. We're talking about trauma now. Another person told me a trauma story. And they went to a parent, and the parent said, you make things up. That's not what's really happening. Where do you get this from? Okay, now think about these three people. Now, they come to therapy years later. The first person who's told you're angry, you have emotions problems, you know what they come to therapy for? They don't say, I'm traumatized. They don't say an abuse story. They don't say, this is what I've been through and I'm suffering. They say, how do I deal with my anger and my emotions? They're so weird. Something's wrong with my emotions. And the second person says, David, I need forgiveness help. I hold on to things. And the third person says, I'm so confused. I make up things. I don't know why I don't see things clearly. Why am I imagining things and making things up? Now, look what's happened in that situation. That person has a violent experience, and now they reach out to someone, to the world, to a culture, to a police station, to a religious system, and they say, something's wrong with you. You've got forgiveness problems, anger problems, emotion problems, making up things, imagination problems. That's shame, because that person is no longer connected to their story, to what lives in them that belongs, those feelings belong. The not forgiveness belongs because there's something still in them that they need to be in touch with. It's not right to forgive, as we call it, yet. So all those people come thinking something's wrong with me. Why am I like this? And they never think about their violence story. They don't think about a trauma story. And they don't think that shame is defining and diagnosing them as having something wrong with them. That's really painful to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this reminds me, I'm going to get personal here, because this reminds me of something I say to myself, and I've written about this, like, oh, whatever happened to me throughout my life, especially in my childhood, it's all great because of who I am now today. I'm stronger because of it, and I am who I'm, whatever I am, whatever wonderful attributes I have and gifts I'm expressing in the world today because of that. And then as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about, all right, here's where maybe my denial is or my trauma is. I was one of four siblings, and we're very close in age. In fact, three of us were in high school at the same time. So four of us, very close in age. And our father traveled a lot, and he would be gone a lot. Mm. Our mother was a binge alcoholic. So my childhood was very, I don't know, schizophrenic in some ways, feast and famine, so to speak. But we, when daddy was gone and mother was drunk, we were very unsupervised. We were urchins on our own, you know, figuring out our own hierarchy. And of course, I'm the third child and I'm low person and probably taking out on my little brother what's dealt out to me. Do you kind of get the scenario?
Yep. Yes.
And there's probably so something maybe in my body that I'm not, that suffered with that scenario as a child that has not been addressed.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Does this make sense to you? Is there
anything
you could add?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. How would I respond to that?
Yeah.
I'd say you're beginning to tell like a story, something, describe a situation. And then I would say, let yourself go back in your memory to some extent, right? To that situation, the third child, the mother's alcoholic, she's not really there. And as you do that, what happens in your body? Meaning, what are you feeling in that body? Is there tingling? Is there pressures? Is there shakinesses? What's happening in your body as you let yourself travel back a bit?
Well, all I can do is, all right, one incident comes to me.
Perfect.
It's probably, I'm saying it's probably a little thing, but it's a, no, all right. So we're playing canasta.
Yes.
I'm playing canasta with my older sister, and the pile is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you get the right cards, you can win the whole pile in canasta. And so I got the right card, and my sister says, oh no, you don't want to take that pile yet. You want it to get bigger. And then the very next turn, she gets the right card and she takes the whole pile.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it must be big because I remember it.
Yes.
I was outraged, but I didn't, there was nothing I could do. I felt helpless in the face of her being able to win the canasta pile.
Yes, you were. I mean, if we had much more time, we'd go into that body more. But as I listen to that story and thinking about shame meaning something that gets hidden, then I'm thinking this way, Justine. There's a girl, woman, however old you were, that would have reached out taken that pile.
Right.
I won. I did it. This is my pile. I got it.
Right.
And then something says, I'll prevent you from doing that. I'll manipulate you. I'll confuse you so you don't
do that. I always defer to her. I was a well into my adulthood before I quit deferring to her.
That's right. And then so then I'd say, this part of you, Justine, that wants to grab the pile. That's what I want. I've won. I've won in life. I had a good day. I want to not defer to other people. David, this is what I want to get out of this discussion. The party that wants to reach out and grab what is yours, your winnings, your gold. I want to make sure she lives.
Right. Yeah.
How is she doing? Other parts are doing great. I'm glad we can make amazing things out of hell. You know, for many, some people can. Some people just get crushed. Some people can make things out of that. But what about that one who would grab the pile? I got it. I won. This is mine. I want that. That was mine.
Right, right.
That one.
That also goes to the discussion on boundaries and being able to say no, you know, to say no. That's a really hard one, I think. And I think that you actually write about how even if the body, and this isn't always the case of illness, but even the body might come in and say, okay, here's a boundary by just making us ill in some way.
Yeah, it's huge. I was just listening to a poem by Robert Bly, who died some years ago. And the last line of the poem was, I realize that if I lay down, no one will die. Right. And he grew up on a farm. And that's a poetic sense. He wasn't saying literally, but the sense of, Justine, if I rest, is life going to fall apart? Right. And then I would, in terms of shame, I'd say, what stops you from resting? You're always putting your head on the pillow saying, I'm going to take a sweet nap. David, what stops you? Well, something's wrong with it. I should have more energy, shouldn't I? I'll have some coffee. I'll go to sleep earlier. I will exercise more. I'll do something so I have more energy, and then I won't have the tiredness problem. But then the shame part is, how come it's not okay to not have more energy? How about if you're tired? How about if you're 68 years old, David, and you don't want to run as fast? Well, I have to run faster, you know, so to speak.
Exactly.
That? So that's like a really big thing. People don't need to learn how to have boundaries. They need to unshame their natural boundary-making impulse. Because if you violate my space, if you put your hand towards my face and I were free, at some point I put my hand up. If I'm not free, because I've learned that that's a bad thing, I shouldn't be disrespectful, or I can get hurt, or it's a mistake.
I just want to remind our listeners, I'm here with David Bedrick. He is the author of The Unshaming Way, a three-part model for dismantling shame. Mm-hmm. I'm Justine Willis-Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, New Dimensions.